It is Thursday, and that's our Thought Leader Day, Thought Leader Thursday this morning. Chuck Garcia is in from Associated Bank today. He's the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management, and we've been talking, Chuck, about all kinds of things related to the Equifax breach. Things are still sort of unfolding on this, but first, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
The Equifax breach is still front and center for a lot of folks on their minds. What are you hearing? What's your ear to the ground?
Well, probably reading the same things everyone else is, and it's really, I think, highlighted for everybody in the industry and really just John Q. Consumer, elevation of risk we all have on a day-to-day basis of just different sources getting our information and now critical information, Social Security numbers, dates of birth. It's pretty frightening.
This is really affecting mainly consumer banking, or is it all aspects of banking?
Well, this particular element is certainly oriented more toward the consumer, this particular situation, but it really, I think, highlights the vulnerability we all have. Businesses absolutely of all sizes. I think larger companies have recognized for some time that having cybersecurity programs, working with outside vendors, their banks, et cetera, has been critical. But I think it's really highlighting down to small businesses, individuals, and very much in the mainstream corporate banking world.
I know in the past conversations we focused on how this might affect people if they're getting a mortgage or something like that, but there are all kinds of aspects in banking that this could make people vulnerable in.
Yeah, account opening. You know, if people froze their account or they had strange occurrences, somebody wants to open a new account. There are all kinds of aspects that it can impact beyond, you know, just getting credit.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the day-to-day things that happen at Associated Bank with this sort of fraud prevention?
Well, we have a lot of analytical tools, and I think for any of us to say we're not vulnerable, I think we're mistaken.
Right.
We all know that if somebody wants to create something, they can. We have a lot of analytical tools. We continue to invest in all kinds of cybersecurity programs, behavioral analytics that we utilize where, you know, we can see often when things begin to stir, there is change. But I think, you know, people saying that you can eliminate it is just a falsehood.
And from a consumer standpoint, I'll use myself as an example. My biggest concern, somebody's going to open a checking account in my name and I'm not going to know about it or something like that, or get a mortgage. How do we know this unless we're watching this every day?
I think that is really the key piece. I mean, people have to feel responsible for their own information, mm-hmm. and their own well-being there. And it's time consuming. It's concerning. There's no doubt. I think any tools you can assign or sign up for with your institution or other outside sources that can give you alerts and things of that nature that are abnormal to your normal patterns, I'd really encourage people to do that.
Yeah, because in the past, I know that with my checking account, things have happened where, you know, somebody's bought something online or some purchase was made in another state, and the analyticals you're talking about, is that what that is, that they can tell that, hey, Steve probably is not in Florida?
Yeah,
today.
The anomalies that will pop up on your account, I mean, it's very sophisticated these days. I think it really started mostly in the credit card business years back, and they've really refined that, but it really pertains to just DDA accounts too and just activity. So anything you can sign up for that can give you any type of early detection, it's great for you, it's great for the financial institution, and anything that consumers can do on that front.
I heard we've been telling people that one of the surefire ways of protecting your credit is freeze all of these credit reports. But I heard a story the other day where banking is brought into this, that there are some banks that may not like you to do that. What would happen on a day-to-day basis that would a credit freeze on my account would impact my banking?
Well, I've heard things like opening new accounts, it can create an issue. So opening new accounts, maybe drawing on a line potentially, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden it looks frozen and you can't draw on things. Mm-hmm. I've not heard specific instances myself, but I just common sense says that it has a kind of an unintended consequence on that on the other side.
We will definitely stay tuned on this. I think for the rest of our lives, we're probably going to have to be involved in this because our Social Security numbers were
yes.
in this mess.
Yes.
Interesting to see there has been some discussion now nationally about replacing Social Security numbers. How would that even work?
You know, it makes sense to do it. I will put it that way. Yeah, now, how the mechanics of how that would be established and how, you know, the hundreds of millions of people that will affect, all the bits of information, is just kind of mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. But a new set of credentials, if you will, it just really seems to pass the common sense test from everything we use today. I think the government would be the first step that would have to make the changes on their end, which, you know how quickly that moves. Yeah. But I think the idea really does pass the common sense test.
And so many things are tied up with your Social Security yes. number. I can't even imagine unwinding all of that and changing it. And again, reminding folks, if they don't know, you can't change your Social Security number once you get it.
Right.
That's probably the big thing. It seems like there might be a technological solution to that, though.
I believe there is. You know, some of the things I've read in recent weeks, again, it does seem like technology can pass that one. But again, the broad base of the impacts there is just pretty mind-boggling.
Well, let's move on to something else. I know over the years we've heard dire warnings about how the bank branches are going away. They're becoming dinosaurs. I saw one report said that. But it's not really happening. We're not seeing the disappearance of bank branches. Why?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a different branch versus the conventional branch, especially at my age that we grew up with. It was big. There were, you know, 8 tellers and 3 loan officers, et cetera. If you go into a branch now, you might see 2 tellers. You may see a virtual teller. So the physical space has shrunk, I think, considerably. The numbers are pretty similar from what I read. But the physical space of a branch and the composition of a branch is very different. Often now, the use of virtual bankers. So you're a banker and sitting in one location. I may be 7 blocks away at another location, and I'm talking to you on an iPad and doing an analysis of what you might need. So I think the composition of the branch and how they're staffed, the types of technology that is used today, is very different.
And why is it important for a bank like Associated to have these branches in communities, in the neighborhoods?
Well, 2 things. It's presence in terms of being visible to your client. We're not a virtual bank. We're a commercial and a consumer bank. And having a presence and a physical visibility is important. And some people still use a branch. I know I do. There's one in our building, and you know, I'm there twice a month, maybe, but it's sure nice to have it when you need it versus having to perhaps scan something or mail something. And so there still is a market for the need there. It's just a different need today.
And so much different, too. I remember being a kid and with my mom going to the bank in the drive-up window, they'd throw the little sucker in the pneumatic tube, the lollipop. That's changed a little bit, but it's still, you know, kind of part of our history here.
Well, there's a good example. I mean, most branches now that you have a window outside, maybe there's 1 or 2 lanes, and you can think of the day. There's still a few around, but where there are 8, 10 lanes of cars, today it's maybe 1 or 2.
It's funny that you mentioned the iPad. Is it possible, or are we headed to a time where there actually may be a physical robot there helping us?
I hope not. Probably. Yeah. I hope not. I think people, when it comes to money, seeing somebody and having that personal relationship often is very significant. Now, again, the newer generation may not care, may not want that or value that, but I think that day will likely come. I hope it's not real soon.
Only if the robot can also shoot lasers and chase after people.
That do something fun, yes.
Exactly. Speaking of technology, AI is, we've mentioned so many times in our conversations about how artificial intelligence is sort of changing all kinds of different areas.
Yes.
Banking is one of those. Talk to me a little bit about how it's being used to simplify invoicing.
That's a great point. It really is beginning to take hold. You know, I heard about this maybe first 2 years ago, I would say, and I'm like, interesting. It's reality today, and the learnings that can be incorporated in terms of, again, patterns. Companies have patterns, too, of who they bill, how they pay, and that learning can occur, and it's beginning to take root in kind of more mainstream, upper middle market corporate banking for lockboxing, for example. And I think then rolling that inside companies for their side of the equation is absolutely going to happen.
I think we learned a new term, lockboxing. What is that? Tell us about that.
Glad you said it. So lockboxes, it was for the normal consumer, you get your cable bill, okay, and you write a check and there's a scan line in that cable bill. You send it in. Banks or outside firms read that. They process your payment. That's called a lockbox. You mail it to a central location. Corporates use that as well, not beyond just consumers. They'll, when they invoice and receive payment from their corporate clients, they'll use a lockbox as well. It's just a higher dollar, lower type of volume transaction. But that's where the AI is becoming, again, very mainstream for those complicated type of invoices with a lot of information. It's fascinating, and it's taking hold.
It's hard to imagine there used to be a time when there actually was humans matching all of those invoices to the payments.
And there still is.
There still is.
Yes.
So how quickly is it moving to artificial intelligence?
I think, again, I first really kind of heard about this a couple of years ago. I would say in the last 6-8 months, it's accelerated considerably. I think the cost of this is going to be kind of the barrier for mainstreaming it. But once the cost can be incorporated into more mainstream or more typical applications, I absolutely know it will take hold.
Are there any downsides to this, and what kinds of challenges are involved with it?
Well, conceivably, I mean, it's outplacing certain people that do certain jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would say they could go do more important tasks or more significant items inside the company. But there's a downside to that. But there's also the upside of people that have to program the learning, people that have to create that type of scenario. And so it'll have a balance on both sides.
One of the other big technological advances, reading this article from Finextra about this treasury management simulation tool. Tell us about how companies have to look at different amounts of dollars, rubles, whatever currency they're looking at, and sort of come up with their budget and treasury plan, and how software and, different kinds of technologies helping that.
Well, our bank and really any major commercial bank of any size, and certainly the money centers, et cetera, have long had information reporting that they give to clients. Years ago, it started out as very simple information. Now it's all via the internet. It's cloud-based in a lot of cases. And it's very extensive in terms of balance information, transaction information, like we were just talking about, affecting wire transfers, ACH, automated clearinghouse payments. So very extensive use of that platform. I think what you're seeing here in the particular situation you're noting is there is a firm that lets corporates, and these would be pretty much multinational type of mm-hmm. corporates that use multi-banks, maybe 20-some banks, and they're in different countries, different currencies, sample out different platforms to say which one works best for me and how can I ideally utilize this for my cash flows, my budget forecasting, etc. Pretty high-end, very, very sophisticated software there.
DBS Bank in Asia is one of the ones that's using this. How much can that save a client in terms of not only manpower but also money?
It's considerable. When you think of again, a multinational that has currencies all over the world, they have balances maybe trapped in one location, and they can move them to another location to optimize FX, improve their cash flows, improve their returns. It could be many millions of dollars on a daily basis, literally.
Is this one of those other areas where we may see this artificial intelligence, maybe not the
sure.
software, but
sure.
artificial intelligence completely take this over?
It absolutely could. Again, the predictive analytics, you know, our bank uses them in our treasury function. Large multinationals have for some time used that type of predictive analytic to maximize their inflows, outflows, et cetera.
You know, I don't think people give you enough credit, Chuck. You've got to stay up on a lot of stuff, don't you?
You do. There's regulatory, which,
right.
you know, we know that changes frequently. The technology is what makes this business fun, though. You know, I think back to the early days when I got involved and literally things were all manual or via telephone. And to see the evolution of the business has been very fun.
The regulatory part of this, last week we saw the Federal Reserve chair in her testimony talk about how she is really pushing and really wants small and mid-sized bank regulations to be eased off. I'm sure that came as good news to folks.
It needs to rebalance itself. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like anything else. The pendulum swung way far, and I think that's welcome news to our bank, certainly. But I think other banks, smaller, our size and larger, it will have a very positive benefit, and ultimately to our clients.
Because is it? I mean, a simple way of putting this is that they sort of lumped you in with the big banks,
sure.
right?
Sure.
You had to do everything the big banks had to do.
True.
Yeah. Chuck, it's good to see you, and we'll see you again next time, all right?
Always. Great.
Chuck Garcia is Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. And remember, you can listen to more of our Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversations at WGNRadio.com on the opening bell page. Also, at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. Make sure you follow Associated Bank as well at Associated Biz. We're going to continue, by the way, our conversation with Chuck after the bell and post that in our full podcast of the program.